plant on the line program here at thecommentary.ca. I'm about a quarter of a way through a new novel, and I put it down only to talk to the book's author, Gail Anderson Dargatz. The book is called Turtle Valley, the number one best-selling author of The Cure for Death by Lightning and A Recipe for Bees, which were both nominated for the Giller Prize. It takes us to a place where her heroine, Kat, untangles her family's past in the midst of packing up and fleeing a central British Columbian forest fire season. It's quite an evocative and moving book describing love and life and memory, making for an inevitably memorable book. Published by Knopf, the book retails for $32. Her most recent book, which was also a bestseller, as I suspect Turtle Valley will be as well, was A Rhinestone Button. I am pleased to welcome to the Plant on the Line program Gail Anderson Dargatz. Good morning, Gail.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. Because I've read about you elsewhere, I know that parts of your writing have been gleaned from personal experience. The reader automatically assumes that, I guess, when they read a novel or a work of fiction. Does all of it come from personal experience in your case?
Oh, absolutely not, no. And I was just did an interview with Sheila Rogers, and I talked about it on my blog. She asked the question, you know, what is being candid about my inspirations cost me? And I think maybe this is the only thing it's cost me, is the assumption that the writing must be autobiographical or even memoir. And it's not. I started out being a small-town reporter, and so I do a whole lot of interviews with my writing. So my approach has always been to start with a personal story, something that's happened to me or someone I know, but then that's just the starting point. I've then gone out and interviewed as many people as I can find who've been through something similar. So I'm looking for patterns of behavior, details, their stories, bits of dialogue and conflicts, anything that'll feed the writing. And then, you know, when I sit down to write the stuff, my subconscious does take over. And so it's very much transformed, and it becomes a story that I don't own. It's a story that I haven't lived through. It's something that a great many people have lived through. So hopefully people who pick up the book, you know, a good number of them will have something in common with those characters. So I try very hard to push past the personal and into the universal, and that's quite important to me because, you know, I don't want to write my own story. That would be dull.
A reviewer of this book, Turtle Valley, suggested that you'd perhaps write a memoir soon.
No, and again, that's the assumption right there. And, a lot of fiction writers face this even when they're not candid about where things come from. There is that assumption that we write about our own lives or have lived it in some way. And certainly our own experience influenced writing heavily, and especially with my approach where I'll start with, you know, something I've lived through or someone I know has lived through, and then do the research from there. So that assumption is out there. There's really not much I can do about that. I'm not interested in writing memoir. I'm interested in writing about things other people have gone through, and that's my approach. I do a lot of interviews. It's very important that I do that. And I teach at UBC in the MFA program there, and I get my students to do a whole lot of interviewing as well, especially when they've started by writing from personal stories.
Is that common that a novelist would do interviews for as part of the research?
Well, I'm actually surprised how many fiction writers don't do interview. So no, I don't think it is common, but it is an approach that I get my students to take because, especially when you're working with personal story, doing interview will move you past your own personal assumptions and prejudices and will get you into that universal when I'm talking about. It will make you see those patterns of behavior. It will make you look at the larger picture and get you out of your own story, which I think is very important. Fiction is not memoir. They really don't have a whole lot in common, although you can start with, you know, that personal story. That's the beauty of fiction. I mean, if you read a good book of fiction, you can see your own story there. There's something about fiction that will take you beyond, you know, any one personal experience, and yet there's the commonalities there. There's a community that you find there in that book.
I was reading, you talk about your mother, pardon me, Kat talks about her mother in the book, and sort of the memory loss that she seems to be going through. Also, Kat's husband has suffered a stroke, and the detail is so exquisite and just so fine that One suggested that you got that from your interviews, but at the same time, from what I've read about you, you lived through some of that in your own life, the stroke.
In the last, 4 years of writing this book, I was involved in caregiving with my mom. And she did suffer mental decline, memory loss, and then did have a stroke. And that certainly fed both the Ezra character and the Beth character, and there's no doubt about that. At the same time, I was there in the institution where she was cared for, and I was sitting and talking with other people who had gone through exactly that and was watching other people going through exactly that. And I was also invited to do keynote lectures at hospice events, hospice conferences, and met a whole lot of people going through exactly the same experience. These were, you know, wives taking care of their husbands, husbands taking care of their wives, moms taking care of their kids, kids taking care of their moms. And what interested me through all of these discussions were the commonalities and the similarities to my own experience, and the differences as well, because each of us goes into that sort of experience very differently. You know, we've got our own histories and our own worldviews, and we take all that in with us. And so I learned a lot about myself and how I was dealing with things. I learned a lot about my mom, but I learned a lot about other people and how they approach things. And all of that experience fed into this novel. So again, it became a story that was about a great many people. And I was quite thankful to the people I talked to. Again, I learned so much from them.
Do the people that you talk to subsequently read your books and do you hear back from them? Do they say, hey, I remember that, that's from my life?
Yeah, they do.
Do they?
Often they will say that even when it's not, which is really interesting. I also hear back from people who I haven't talked to who tell me that, hey, that you must have heard my story. And I didn't. And that's quite common. And it's common for a great many, again, fiction writers, whether they're candid about where their inspirations come from or not. And again, that's the beauty of fiction. We see ourselves in fiction. And of course, I think a great many writers don't understand this, and I know a great many readers don't, that they create the book along with the author when they read the book. You know, and that's why every book is different for every reader. So, you know, anybody who's reading a book takes their own history and their own stories and the people they know into the book with them, and they really do create the book. So isn't it surprising that they see the people that they know and love?
How much of Kat do you see in yourself?
Well, certainly the situation, you know, dealing with caregiving, which is very hard. It's very hard on relationships. I remember a point just last year, my mother just passed away this spring, where, you know, I've got a 3-year-old daughter as well, and I remember one point sitting with my mom, and I realized I was stroking her hair to comfort her as I would my 3-year-old, and I realized at that point that our relationship had changed absolutely, fundamentally, that I was the mom and she was the daughter, and that's heartbreaking when that happens. So I think you can see elements of that in the novel, that it's heartbreaking when our relationships alter so fundamentally through illness of one kind or another, or through other situations. You know, fire that I write about in the book. The people I talk to, their family relationships altered because of that fire. So yeah, I mean, certainly there are elements of myself there. She's braver than me. She's feistier than me. She's you know, a great many things that I'm not. So I think I see more of myself in the Beth character, to be honest. And I'm writing very much about my relationship with writing when I write about the Beth character and about my own fears. Watching my mother in mental decline was quite frightening. And I think anybody who's been through that experience realizes that they may be looking at their own future.
You're talking to us from Vancouver this morning. Where you live in the Shuswap region, do you?
Yeah, I live in the Shuswap Thompson. That's where I grew up, and I just moved back there not too long ago. Been there, the last 4 years now.
And so that obviously contributes to the setting of Turtle
Very
Valley.
Much, very much, yeah.
You'd lived through a fire, had you?
Well, I didn't. My parents were in the shoe swap when the fire of 1998 happened, and that was it was quite a terrible fire. Most of the town of Salmon Arm was evacuated, and so I did come and help my parents evacuate from that fire. I didn't live through the firestorm that I wrote about, however. That was wholly from interviews and from research. The town itself was evacuated following that that really quite horrific experience where a fireball went through the Salmon Valley and just wiped out many farms, and then went up the other hill and wiped out Mount Ida, which is the landmark of the town. It's what everybody can see from downtown. So so I didn't live through that. My parents were evacuated after that because there was fears that the fire would then go and consume the town.
Rhinestone Button came out 5 years ago, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Did it take you 5 years to write this book?
Yes.
Is that like, I'm always interested when I have writers on, whether it be fiction or nonfiction, when they say it takes however long it takes to write the book, is that every day? Like, is that, how do you write?
Well, I write full time, and I do write every day. I also teach as well, so that does take up some of my time, and I'm also a mom, so that takes up a lot of time. But yes, it took me that long to write the book.
Is it a discipline sort of thing where you have to write between such and such hours, or do you just write any time that something comes to you?
Well, some writers need deadlines. I teach my students not to write that way. Writing should be play. If it's discipline and work, then your subconscious will balk and tell you to piss off. You know, it's you really need to play with writing and make it fun. So once I'm in the habit, you know, stepping in the book tour season means I step out of the writing habit, and once I go back to it, it takes about 3 weeks to get back in the habit of writing, and that's hard to get myself back there, but once I'm there, I don't want to do anything else. So it's it really is fun. There's nothing I'd rather do.
Is it a solitary experience? Does someone look at your writing at any time?
Well, again, I make a point of using interview mostly to bring in all those wonderful details and to enlarge the writing. But I also do that because I'm quite a social person and really need to get out. And so I make writing as social as I can by stepping out and doing research, going to places, talking to people. I do involve my husband, who's a photographer, and he helps me see the landscape in different ways. So we make a point of going out and on photo shoots, and I'll sit and take notes. So I try to get out as much as I can into the world as I'm writing. I think that's quite important, and again, I think it's something not enough fiction writers do. And again, it's an approach that I really ask my students to give a try, because it's important to experience. You can't write about things you don't experience.
I guess if you write a bit of the story, do you ever show that to anyone?
At some point I do, yeah. I do involve other readers. I do a lot of brainstorming, again, with my husband and with other friends. I've got, in the past, I have had readers who I depended on quite a bit, and one of them was Jack Hodgins, who's been a mentor of mine since the start of my career. So I do involve other people during the process. But, the actual writing, of course, is solitary. It's I just need to focus and sit there and let the stuff come out. So that means sitting in front of the desk and just getting lost in that world.
Your husband contributed to the book these photographs that we see between the chapters.
Yeah.
They're great photographs. Are they of family mementos?
Yeah, they're largely family heirlooms that belong to me, and I chose them. It took us about a year to do those photos, and it was about choosing the objects, photographing them, and photographing them again, but I did choose those specific ones because I thought that they would invoke, feelings of nostalgia and memory in the readers as well, because I think we all have objects like that in our household, or most of us do. And they're vessels of memory. They hold our history and places where I've already read the book, I've had people come up afterwards every time and say, oh, you know, I have an object like this. Or they would tell me a story about an object that was lost. And in a few cases, I've been in tears because the objects have meant so much. So that's been really quite rewarding.
There's one picture I want to dwell on for just a sec here, and it's on page 50, just at the start of chapter 5. It's a deck of cards wrapped in, I can't make it out what it is.
It's a little leather container to hold the cards.
Who owns that?
That, I think, belonged to my Uncle Stan, who drowned in the mid-40s. So it was something that was just always around in the household. And I don't ever remember it not being around, so I'm pretty sure that was who originally owned that.
And the dad in the book, Turtle Valley, he has a deck, I guess.
He has a deck of cards, yeah.
I mean, that sort of detail just really, I mean, I can't wait to finish the book because of that.
Yeah, the objects were fun. As I was incorporating them into the book, they really did change a great many things, and it was really fun to involve the photos and the objects in the novel.
You're a writer by profession, but besides teaching,
mm-hmm.
You'd had these previous successes. You know, your books have all been bestsellers and prize nominees and so on, prize winners. Was it hard to sell this book?
No. No, it was pretty easy to sell this book. My editor was just delighted to get it. I think in part because I went back to my home landscape in the book as well as personally. And when I did that, Family Stories sort of arose out of that landscape and did take me back to The Cure, and she was quite delighted about that. So it hasn't been a hard sell at all. We've just started to sell internationally. We just had a Dutch sale, so that's starting up as well.
Do you come up with these stories, and then you pitch them to the publisher, or does the publisher make a commitment? We want your next book.
Well, I never pitch a story. I make a point of writing the novel before I hand over the manuscript.
I see,
and that's important to me. I have been in a situation where I've sold a book before writing it, and was very uncomfortable with that. It just didn't work for me. I think maybe it would work for other authors, but no, it's never about pitching. I just let the book come and then take it to my publisher and see if they like it or not.
Do you think in this country we do enough to support new authors?
Yeah, I do. I think we can always do more. I remember having one when the Giller Prize was invented. I remember having an interviewer ask me if we need yet another prize, and I said, oh my God, yes. You know, do you know what it's like for most of us writers out there struggling away? There can never be enough prizes and support for writing. It's very, very hard to make a living, and it can be very discouraging, and so anything we can do to support our writers is great. Having said that, though, I think we're at a point now where our literary world here in Canada has matured, and you know, we're grown-ups. We're out there in the world. We're doing just fine. Our books are doing well internationally, and are being celebrated internationally. So I think the time now is to say, hey, look at what we are, and to be proud of that, and to know that we're part of the world out there, and a big chunk of it.
When you say we need more prizes, does that mean because prizes raise the profile of an author or a book, or just because the writer needs the ego boost from a prize?
Well, writers being writers always need ego boost, but that's not what I'm talking about. It is about raising the profile of the writers, and prizes do that. They get the media interest, and you know, certainly the book sales and the book gets read and all the rest of it. So, you know, raising the profile of, and it's not just the one book. The prize is when we have the Giller Prize. It becomes an event where all books are talked about, so everybody benefits from it. So, so that's what I mean when I say we need more prizes.
You'd lived with this book for 5 years. Was it hard to part with it?
Well, yeah.
And when do you part with it? When you hand it to the publisher, or when you see the book in bound?
It comes a little before seeing it in book form, and it is a funny feeling because you become, I should speak for myself, I become very bonded to my characters, and they become a community, and And it's, you know, it's like going through a separation. It's very hard to give up that community. Having said that, though, there once that act of distancing happens, you know, I talked about this with my editor on an interview that's on the Random House site. It's very much like seeing, you know, an old lover on the street and saying, hey, you know, I had really good times with you, and still feeling some affection, and yet there's that distance there as well. The book is out there. It belongs to the reader now. It's not mine, and I'm on to the next project. So it's kind of an interesting place to be, talking about the book. It's on the one hand a good old friend of mine, and on the other, you know, it belongs to somebody else.
Well, when it belongs to the reader, and the reader jumps to their own conclusions or makes their own assumptions about this character, that character, this situation, does that bother you at all? Does
it? No, I recognize people make their assumptions, and that's just part of the writing life. And again, you know, with my students at UBC, we talk quite a bit about this, that as a writer, you simply have to let go and let go of the personal aspects as well, and realize that people will make assumptions about your writing and about you, and that's just part of the writing life.
So talk to me about the course that you're teaching at UBC. You obviously see a lot of writing through your students. Mm-hmm. Do you see any good writing?
Oh, terrific writing. This is the... it's the optional residency MFA program, so we're attracting a very different kind of student. It's not the, you know, the young people coming to campus. These are all people who are already established in their given fields, and many of them are already established writers. So it's really interesting to be working with these people. We sometimes sit around in our faculty meetings looking at our list of students and going, oh my God, what have I got to teach this person? Because they're already out there, they're already published. And yet they're wanting to work in a different genre, say. And so each of these writers brings in a terrific amount of skill from whatever discipline they're already working in, and brings that to class. And I've never been involved in any kind of teaching program like this. It changes from year to year because of the mix of students and what they bring into the program. So, you know, I end up learning so much from them. I take notes weekly for myself. So it's a really dynamic program to be working in.
You started as a journalist and a cartoonist, I read somewhere.
Yeah.
Did that inform, like, I mean, did you have a knack for writing fiction before that, or did that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I was writing fiction first. And again, my mom was a scribbler, so I guess that's where it came from. Yeah, well, actually, I know quite a few writers who also did the cartooning and certainly worked as journalists beforehand. Amory McDonald, I remember I did an event with her and was talking, and it came out that she also did some cartooning, which I thought was quite funny. So I don't know, there's something about that mind set, the writing and doing the cartooning and doing the journalism. They're very different, and yet there's some similarities there. I don't really have a journalist mind. I like creating fiction, so that wasn't my strongest point, but I really appreciated having that experience because I use those skills even now, as I said, in interviewing for fiction.
May I ask what you're working on now? What's the next project?
Well, it's still forming, so I hesitate to talk about it, but my husband is involved in a wonderful program. He volunteers. He does map making and then working through data for a project where they're doing restoration work on a river, trying to get the salmon back in the river, and it involves a very huge watershed. It's a very large region that they're working on, and it interests me because the people involved in that program have managed to bring a community together to make that happen. And, of course, there's a great many people trying to do very similar things, but it's very hard to get everybody working on the same line. So I really like that as a situation. So we'll see what comes of that. I'm still working that one up.
Well, thanks so much for joining us today. I did, as I said, enjoyed the book, and I am enjoying the book, and look forward to finishing it. Congratulations on it, and continued good luck with it.
Well, thank you very much.
Gail Anderson-Dargatz is the author of Turtle Valley, $32 from Knopf. I'm Joseph Planta.